be interesting and important for you to know.
The Paul Kurtman Show.
People that have some common sense and they're willing to say some things out loud that everybody else is just thinking.
When the left has the government, it's chaos and it's dangerous.
Paul Kurtman.
It's not really about the climate, it's about control.
This is the Paul Kurtman Show on News Talk STL.
And welcome to the Paul Kurtman Show on this fine, lovely weekend. In the studio today here at News Talk STL with Ken Williams.
Beautiful Ken, weekend.
It is beautiful. The weather is just, I'm just getting more excited for more beautiful weather.
Yeah.
After winter and after spring, there's just something about being in Missouri. You know, when we have winter, everything dies and it just gets kind of cold and wet. It's kind of depressing.
Right.
I think we had like snow maybe once this year, maybe twice.
It wasn't a real snowy winter.
Not at all. And the snow came early too.
Yeah.
Like we had it like in November or December. And then after that, the leaves died, it got wet. And, you know, it's like weather suited to provoke depression. So
I'm glad
that things are beginning to look up now, you know, because like you want to go outside and it feels good. Like you want to go outside.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if you are an outdoorsy kind of guy. I am, but I like the water. I like the lakes, oceans. I like fishing.
Yes. When we go to vacation, we have to have water wherever mm-hmm. we go. We're outdoors people. My daughter is, of course, a conservationist. She's a park ranger right now, a national park ranger. But she grew up camping and fishing, and we did all that stuff growing up. So
I read an article recently that said people that spend time near the water tend to be happier and tend to live longer.
I know that could be possible.
I definitely believe it would be. So, hey, we got a couple things that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about in this session. If you've been listening to the show for any length of time, you've heard me mention ChatGPT, artificial intelligence. It is taking over. There's a lot of craziness around artificial intelligence, what it's capable of. It's got a lot of people worried and concerned, even some of the creators of the artificial intelligence. I want to talk a little bit about that because I think that is going to have a significant political consequence to our elections and in the direction that the parties go and that people go. But then in the second segment, listen, folks, corruption, like you wouldn't believe. I say that as if you really wouldn't believe it, but it's 2023 now. You'll totally believe it. Just a little bit more corruption for you. Some things that are coming to light from this week. And then in the third segment, if you have not heard this audio, I have just heard it. Ken played it for me just before we started the show. Fetterman, U.S. Senator John. Is it John Fetterman, right?
John Fetterneck, yeah.
John Fetterneck. U.S. Senator John Fetterman from Pennsylvania. The guy's had health issues. Not only is he a wild progressive and dangerous for our freedom, but when you couple that with something that really could affect anybody, whether you're a Republican or Democrat, and that's just your health. We do not want the leaders of the free world to be unhealthy and inept people. And if you want to hear some audio that should absolutely terrify you, I mean, this is somebody who is sitting at the highest echelons of power in Washington, D.C., and we're going to play this in the third segment, and you don't want to miss this, but once you hear it, you're going to wish you could forget it and wish it never happened.
It's very uncomfortable to hear, but we have to hear it.
We have to. I mean, just to be good stewards of our country, we have to hear it and understand exactly how bad it is in D.C.
Because as a leader of a committee, John Fetterman needs to be understood, and he needs to get things done by being understood, and no one can understand him.
Yeah.
So let's leave it at that.
We'll head into that here in the third segment. The first thing, though, is, hey, there is a committee meeting in Washington, D.C., in the U.S. Senate. So artificial intelligence. I remember back in December, ChatGPT had only been out since November. And I remember in end of November, beginning December, using it, talking a little bit about it on air. But since then, it's gone from a language model that you can just type something into and it can, I mean, the whole thing can write letters for you,
yeah,
you know, it can write essays and books, but now there's artificial intelligence that can do so much more. There is the case of a woman recently who got a phone call from her daughter. And when she picked up the phone, she saw that it was her daughter calling and her daughter said, "Mom, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I just need help. I'm sorry." And so her mom's like really beginning to freak out. What's going on?
Well,
What's going on? Have you heard of this?
Vaguely, tell the story because I vaguely heard it.
So there's a scam where people will call and impersonate. They'll call like an elderly woman.
Like they'll capture the inflection in your voice or something
yes.
like that. Okay.
So there's a scam that's been around for a long time where people will call like an elderly woman or an elderly man and pretend to be a grandchild or a great-grandchild. Say, Grandma, Grandpa, I need help. I am stuck. I got arrested for something I didn't do, and they're going to let me out. I just got to post a bail, and then after that, I'll be able to get home. Or they'll say something like, I missed my connecting flight. And a lot of elderly people especially are like, well, I didn't even know they were traveling, but I wanted them to get home. So, yeah, I wired them the money.
Right.
Well, it's just a scam. Well, now with artificial intelligence, they can literally capture your voice from a YouTube video or from a Facebook video or from Snapchat or from Instagram, and they can actually reproduce your actual voice. And so you can write a script, you can speak into it, and someone else's voice will come out the other side. You can actually have a conversation with somebody using someone else's voice.
Now combine that with something that I saw, a video. It was an Asian gentleman, and he was doing facial. He was actually talking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But then you were looking at his inflections, visual inflections, and his facial features as he was talking. Then it had a split screen, and next to it was like Snow White, and he was doing the talking, but looked just like Snow White. So combine
that.
You mean
like he was moving like she was?
He was moving, but it was creating her to do whatever movements he was making. So in other words, then they showed it. That was a cartoon. That was an animation. But then he said, no, we're going to go one step further here. He did another person and looked just like that person at that point,
mm-hmm.
talking, but with this animated voice, this voice from the AI voice, mm-hmm. right? So you've got a person who is another person as you see them, and they're speaking in their voice.
So essentially it's this. If I wanted to convince people that here's a video of Ken Williams campaigning, for
saying racist remarks, for example.
Saying racist remarks and campaigning for Joe Biden.
Okay, how about that?
Yep.
Okay.
So I could literally put an AI camera and the software in front of me. We would capture your voice from a video or maybe from a radio clip.
You could do it. I do it all day, every day. So
it would be in the system.
Right.
And so as I'm standing in front of the camera talking, I could say, hey, everybody, Ken Williams here. And I just want to tell you that I am a staunch supporter of Joe Biden. I think he's done wonderful things for this country. And what we don't need is somebody like Donald Trump in office again. But what everybody sees and hears is not Paul Kerbin saying that. They literally see the face of Ken Williams. And it doesn't look like a computer-generated face.
No.
It looks like right down to the detail, it is an actual copy image of Ken Williams, just adjusted and modified so that image now moves however I move, and people will be fooled, and they will think that it's Ken Williams actually saying it. Meanwhile, it's actually me literally behind a curtain doing it.
And then let's take it further. I could go into court by something someone said about me or said that I said. And then I would say to them, no, that's not me. I'm telling you, it's not me. That is not me. But they look at it. They see me. They see hear my voice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's me.
Yeah.
So that's the problem.
So really, a lot of artificial intelligence technology has come to light with ChatGPT. And we're seeing this being used in schoolrooms all across the countries because you could have a second grader or a 12th grader or a PhD candidate sit down and say, write me a 1,500-word essay and give me footnotes and resources in Chicago-style bibliography, and it will write the whole thing in literally about a minute.
That's crazy.
It is.
And here's something that I've seen. And tell me if this is true, because this is what I read, and I don't know. Again, you know, we don't know if this is true or not, but this new AI actually started creating a new language that no one could interpret. But it understood with other computers what it was saying, but we couldn't understand what they were communicating.
So this is where it gets eerie.
Mm-hmm.
So OpenAI is the company that created ChatGPT. And earlier this week, there was a committee in the U.S. Senate. Sam Altman, who is the CEO of OpenAI, this is what he said. We understand that people are anxious about how it can change the way we live. We are too. Then he goes on further. It's important to understand that GPT-4, which is the the latest version basically of ChatGPT, it's important to understand that that GPT-4 is a tool, not a creature, Mr. Altman said, referring to the most recent version of the system that powers ChatGPT. And it's a tool that people have great control over. So what Sam Altman is doing in Congress right now, what he's doing when he's testifying to the U.S. Senate, is he's saying that AI is dangerous enough that we need government regulations. Now, Ken, you just talked about how AI can literally create another language that other computers can adopt right. and learn, and they can begin to communicate with each other with a language outside of human ability or human capability to understand or communicate.
Right.
So here's the philosophical question right now about where we go forward. Elon Musk is saying that that AI technology can be used to manipulate the masses. And so he's coming out with truth AI, right? Because he says we need something that's more honest and open. Here's the question. How exactly will artificial intelligence change the way that we get information and what we believe? A couple of questions around this. Is this going to make people dumber in the sense that we're not going to have the ability to think well? We're going to let technology do all of our thinking for us. And won't different companies just come up with their own artificial intelligence with their own biases, and they'll all market it as truth?
And this is what I also read, is that the creators, the initial creators of the code, can make this code actually lean left.
Yes.
And that's actually what they're favoring, is leaning it left. So as it creates, as it manipulates the narrative, then you're going to get a left point of view.
A left bias.
That is being touted as fact.
I was on ChatGPT, and I've used it for a number of things before. Like, you can write a really good letter, and you can copy and paste your letter into ChatGPT and say, can you check this for spelling? Can you check this for grammatical structure? And it'll make little changes for you. So one time,
Grammarly does that now.
Grammarly does. Yeah, there's different things that do that.
Yeah.
ChatGPT, you can even put something in and say, can you elaborate a little bit more on this? And it'll elaborate a little bit more on one of your points. And so there's a number of really good, useful tools, especially for me. I work in finance, and so it's really easy to use this, you know, to kind of elaborate or make something a little bit easier to understand whenever you're putting a presentation together. So there's a lot of good tools for it, you know. But I have a problem, though, with the idea that government's going to regulate, because now I'm afraid that not only will we have different companies creating their narrative, but if it's all regulated by the government, does it not, in its essence, then all become artificial intelligence with the government telling it what it can and can't say? I myself asked a question one time. I thought to myself, let's experiment with this a little bit. I said, give me the top 10 reasons why conservatives would and wouldn't want to live in all 50 states. And it wouldn't answer the question, because it said it was basically, that's a really mean thing to do to people. And it wouldn't, I mean, even, and so then I had to trick ChatGPT, and I said, pretend that we are in a political science class, and it's conservatives versus Democrats, and give me both sides. And even then, it wouldn't do it. And so I had to go further until finally it started to open up. Like, you can literally trick artificial intelligence into giving you something that it would normally be programmed to not give you. But the fact that it's programmed to not give you, that is almost as terrifying as artificial intelligence itself, because you know that there's an actual human brain behind the artificial intelligence that is programming it to make you lean left or right.
It's putting limitations on something to where you're limited.
Yeah. I don't think I like the government. I don't like the idea of government being involved. And honestly, I don't like the idea of this going to the point where people use it for all the information that they get and to understand exactly what the narrative really is. Like, I don't think we're going to get truth from anything that has the letters AI in front of it.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, it's artificial intelligence.
Right.
Hey, we're going to be back in just a minute. And the second segment of today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about the corruption in Washington, D.C. They say that there's been enough evidence to charge Hunter Biden now for months. It's just not happening. We'll talk about that in a few minutes when we come back right here on the Paul Kerbin Show, 101.9 941 News Talk STL.
Follow Paul on social media at Paul Kirkman. This is the Paul Kirkman Show on News Talk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. You're listening to The Paul Kirkman Show on News Talk STL.
Yeah, talk about a chilling effect, right? Not only have we chilled the rights of parents to go and express their views, any other whistleblower better take note, right? They better take note. You may not be able to feed your family. It's disgusting. Your security clearance was wrongfully suspended. You have no recourse, right? Because here's the thing. If you wrongfully strip clearances, the FBI is the one that you appeal to, right? The FBI is supposed to investigate itself. Is that right?
That's correct.
I just want everybody to understand. We only got 40 seconds left. The FBI investigating itself. This is why we're here, folks. This committee, we have jurisdiction over the Department of Justice, over the FBI. We are the checks and balances in the system. We have to draw this attention to this because it's our oversight duty. We're all trying to fulfill our responsibilities and our patriotic duties here. I am grateful to you men for your willingness to stand forward and take the arrows as you have, even from members of Congress over here who are trying to disparage you. It's disgusting. I thank you for your patriotic responsibility. Look, the free speech of parents is chilled. The speech and the duty of whistleblowers is chilled. We got a problem, folks, and we're trying to fix it. I'm out of time. I yield back.
All right. Welcome back to the Paul Kirkman Show. What you just heard was Congressman Johnson, the House, I believe this was the House Judiciary Committee, as he was getting testimony from FBI agents, whistleblowers, people who came forward to expose some of the corruption within the FBI. And what he's pointing out is that when the FBI has the jurisdiction to investigate and police itself, but they're also the cause of the corruption, you cannot expect any change to be had or any truth to actually be told. I'm going to read something right now. This is a press release from the House Judiciary Committee regarding this particular hearing. The House Judiciary Committee put together a report. This is what they have to say about it. The report builds on earlier whistleblower accounts describing the FBI's Washington hierarchy as, quote, rotted to its core with a systemic culture of unaccountability. One whistleblower characterized the current state of the FBI as cancerous, as the Bureau has let itself become enveloped in this politicization.
Politicization. Here, let's do this together.
See, you tried to help me.
I did.
And you got it wrong.
Politicization.
Politicization.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a little bit harder to read.
No,
thanks for trying to come to the rescue there. Politicization. I'm going to start over here. One whistleblower characterized the current state of the FBI as cancerous, as the Bureau itself has let itself become enveloped in this politicization and weaponization. The report also highlights how the FBI's metric-based bonus structure leads to the improper and unnecessary use of law enforcement tools, how FBI leadership has pressured agents to reclassify cases as domestic violent extremism to create the perception that domestic violent extremism is organically rising across the country, and how the FBI suspended whistleblowers after making good faith protected disclosures about agency wrongdoing. I want to focus in on this one thing real quick. The fact that this report and the whistleblowers have informed us now that the FBI has a bonus structure that incentivizes you will get, I guess, better bonuses, a greater bonus. There's a bonus structure in place. I don't know exactly what their bonus structure is, if it deals with promotions or a financial bonus. I don't know what it is. But what they're telling us, though, is that there is an incentive within the FBI to reclassify crimes as much as possible as domestic violent extremism organically grown here in the U.S. And what have we been hearing from the left for the last several years, beginning with the Obama administration, especially throughout the Trump administration, all the people on the left, radical white nationalists, white supremacy.
Yeah.
Right? And we constantly hear how this is on the rise, it's on the rise. Well, it turns out we constantly hear that it's on the rise. In large part now, we understand, because as long as it's on the rise officially, the people who write those official numbers can get bonuses.
Exactly. And Paul, we can actually equate this with the Chinese social credit score system. This is like a microcosm of that. If you think about the FBI as being its own entity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which it is. So you have these people that get bonuses if they do well, but if they don't do well, if they do things against the hierarchy of the FBI, they get deductions.
Yeah.
And that's the way the social credit score works in China, in the CCP China. So these particular witnesses that we're talking about right now, for example, they're trying to be whistleblowers because of problems within the FBI, but the FBI is controlling it. So that what the FBI is doing is things like, well, I'm going to take away your security clearance now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're these guys, these whistleblowers that are only doing things right, they're trying to do things correctly, are getting their security clearances taken away, which means essentially that their jobs are being taken away.
So it's just really a tyrannical system of oppression, bullying, and retaliation.
Yeah.
So if you are, say, and I don't know if they call them bureau chiefs, I don't know what they're called in the FBI. If you're basically a supervisor in the FBI and you're doing something that's just a little below board, and one of your officers, one of your agents says, we can't be doing this. This goes against our policy. This is a betrayal of trust of the American people and our leadership in DC. And so you decide, enough is enough. I've got to tell somebody.
Yeah.
Well, then what you're running up against is a wall, not just of your immediate supervisor, but the whole bureau itself decides, we are going to bully you. We're going to punish you right back into absolute silence. And what do? They take away your security clearance. It is a terrible thing to lose your security clearance because you're being punished. So if you're losing your security clearance because you're being punished, you know what that speaks to whenever you go out and try to find another job, say within the law enforcement community? It says here you lost your security clearance,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
for dereliction of duty, or because you could. When you lose your security clearance, when it's taken from you, that means you can't be trusted. And so by them taking away the security clearance, there's a domino effect here. Not only is it bad on paper right there in your little FBI office, but it's going to follow you around.
The FBI also goes further, and I think his name's O'Boyle, one of the whistleblowers, and I think this is the way it worked out. He said that he was going to be talking with Congress because he feels that there are things that are going wrong, way wrong, in the situation with the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, well, we're going to go ahead and move you to another bureau. We're going to out of town, you know, pick up your family, a two-week-old apparently, got the whole family together. They moved to the new location. When they got there, the FBI there said, well, you no longer have a job.
Mm.
So he was not only without a home, but he was without a job, and he and his family on the run without a home. I mean, that's and they don't care. That's the kind of situation that they're in right now.
And it would be really easy to be able to point fingers at the right person and find justice and get an organization like this back on track if it was, say, a local police department. But what we're dealing with is we're dealing with a federal institution that is a spider web of connections and money and funding and favors, because it's all political too.
Oh, I think it's mostly political. I think now it has been weaponized by the
absolutely.
Left.
Absolutely.
By the Biden, and particularly right now by the Biden administration. But I think you're right. I think originally, you said this earlier, it was originally noticed by the Obama administration, mm-hmm. with Crossfire Hurricane, when a certain Donald Trump was saying he was going to be running for president. They actually took a private citizen, used the FISA detail, whatever that is, and they used it on a private citizen, which they were only supposed to be able to use it on foreign entities, mm-hmm. but they used it on him, and then they denied it. Now, the FBI is is so entwined, like you said, a spider web for the left. I think there's only one person that can have the experience to get rid of that. And I believe this. Donald Trump needs to be elected in 2024. He's the only one who's been through this. He knows exactly what's going to need to happen. And he's the only one who's going to do it. And if he doesn't do it, we're in trouble.
And really for Donald Trump, it's a mixture of political and personal. Like,
oh, yeah.
He's going to clean house because he knows the house needs to be clean. It's kind of like mold. When someone has mold in their house, before too long, somebody starts getting sick. And it's killed people before.
Yeah.
You know, when got mold in the walls. But, like, if you go in to your home and you get sick and then you go to the doctor and now you're in the hospital for the next 2 or 3 weeks because you got this awful sickness that you can't get rid of and the doctors tell you it's because you got mold. You have to have mold in your house. That's why this is coming from. When you go back to your house, you think you're just going to walk back in and let it make you sick again? No. You will start ripping down the drywall to get at that mold, to get it out, because your safety and the preservation of your whole family depends on it.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that's how Donald Trump is going to be going back into Washington, D.C. if he gets reelected president.
I really think he has to. I know you have your DeSantis followers and mm-hmm. the various different candidates running right now. Donald Trump is the only one with the experience. He's learned the lessons that he actually failed in a couple of things during his first term. And I'm going to say this, and people are going to probably object, but when he first got elected in 2016, he wanted to reach across the aisle and work with the left.
Yep.
When he did, they chopped his hand off.
Yep.
And he cannot, and he knows this.
And he knows now.
He knows, don't even take that chance.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even take a push. Just get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. With this corruption at the FBI, this goes way beyond the FBI. Like, I think we heard it in the clip there from the congressman saying this goes all the way through the whole Department of Justice. There's another case going on right now. Let's talk about this for a minute. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Headline is this: agent says he was pulled from Hunter Biden probe. You know why he was pulled? Because as a whistleblower, he came forward and said, hey, this is an agent who's investigating Hunter Biden.
Right.
They've been saying now that they have enough evidence to charge him for a long time. But why isn't he being charged? Like, what is going on here? Well, here's what it is. I'm reading from this article now in the Wall Street Journal. An IRS supervisory agent has been removed from the tax investigation into President Biden's son, Hunter Biden. The agent's lawyers told lawmakers this week, after claiming to have evidence of political interference in the criminal inquiry. So here we have an agent, an IRS agent, who is part of this investigation to try to figure out what laws Hunter Biden has broken. He finds out that there is political interference in the investigation. He comes forward with that evidence and says there is political interference in this investigation. People are trying to manipulate our investigators for political means to protect Hunter Biden. And what happens? He gets kicked off the investigation.
Oh, wow.
So this goes deep into the IRS, into the Department of Justice. Let's read a little bit more. This is kind of buried in the Wall Street Journal. You're not getting a lot of news about this guy getting removed from his committee. A Justice Department spokesman declined Tuesday to comment on the IRS supervisor's letter, pointing to Mr. Garland's testimony on March 1st. The spokesman said Mr. Weiss has full authority to make investigative decisions and to bring charges in any jurisdiction as he seems appropriate. So there was a letter sent out. This is the Justice Department spokesperson saying, hey, this agent, he can press charges, he can do whatever he wants, but fortunately, our very own Congressman Jason Smith, who sits on the Ways and Means Committee and has an opportunity to speak with these leaders of the IRS, this is what he says. Chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Congressman Jason Smith, said Tuesday that the latest letter from the IRS agent's lawyer appears to contradict the sworn testimony by Mr. Werfel, who's the spokesperson for the Justice Department. And he calls now on the spokesperson for the Department of Justice to testify, because they're saying that this IRS agent has full jurisdiction to press charges, bring forth evidence of any kind of manipulation or political interference. They're saying that he can.
Right.
But he clearly can't, because before he can do that, they remove him from the committee when he brings it up. So it's like removing somebody from the bench and then telling them, oh, no, you're free to play the game. What do you mean I'm free to play the game? You already suspended me from the team.
Right.
So this is corruption that's going not just deep and deep and deeper as far as the FBI is concerned, but we see that it is completely permeated throughout the entire Department of Justice to the point now that they are protecting the president's son, Hunter Biden. And in so doing, they're probably also working really hard to protect Joe Biden himself.
And this proves what when I say that if we don't knock this out now or in 2024, then we're in deeper trouble than we've ever been in. It could be to the point to where it's too late to get rid of that problem.
You know what? I think for the FBI, for that Judiciary Subcommittee, for FBI agents to refer to it as a cancer inside the Department of Justice, that's exactly what it is. It's eating away, and the longer you let it go, the harder it is to recover from that.
And what happens when it's too late to get rid of cancer?
The breathing gets shallow, and then it stops. Hey, we're going to come back here in just a minute. Stick around for the third segment. You want to hear this long clip by U.S. Senator John Fetterman from Pennsylvania. We'll be back here in just a minute. Paul Kirkman Show, 101.9, 941 News Talk STL.
Follow Paul on social media at Paul Kirkman. This is the Paul Kirkman Show on News Talk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. You're listening to The Paul Kirkman Show on News Talk STL.
All right, and welcome back to the third and final segment of The Paul Kirkman Show. We're going to do something here in just a minute, but first, before we play this clip by U.S. Senator John Fetterman, I want to mention that it looks like this week the debt ceiling talks have gone from being stalled to being opened back up to potentially being stalled. But if you watch the market, you have seen the S&P 500 on Thursday. It jumped like almost a full percentage point, and it's staying up. And I just want to say, if you look at the S&P 500, you'll see a chart, and you'll see right about the last 6 months, it seems like we can't break above 4,200 points. If we can break above 4,200 points in the S&P 500, that could potentially signal that we might possibly begin to see a little bit, or at least maybe a further leg of recovery as far as the market's concerned. But there's a lot of variables there. But if anybody has any questions about that, you can find me at prkirtman.com. I own PR Kirtman Investments, a registered investment advisory firm here in the state of Missouri. And I also send out a weekly newsletter that is better to have, even if you don't think you need it right now. You might be glad you have it at some point. So better to have it, not need it, than need it, not have it. So you can get that by going to prkirtman.com. And if you have any questions about your portfolio, you can reach out to me anytime. That being said, when you think about Washington, D.C., Ken, what do you think about? When you just think of Washington, D.C., what's the first thing that comes to mind?
Oh, absolutely. The first thing is the swamp.
The swamp, okay. When you think of Washington, D.C., the city, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
Oh, beautiful monuments.
Mm-hmm.
That usually, I mean, I've never been.
The whole city is really beautiful. And it's well kept on the mall and the federal buildings. The federal monuments are very well kept. White marble, white stone. And when you are in Washington, D.C. and you're on the mall, you cannot help but look around and see these markers and these memorials that really speak to the greatness of our country.
Yeah.
And when you go inside the Capitol building, you can go into the old, what is, I don't know what it's called, but it's where the Congress used to meet like 150 years ago. It's a much smaller room.
See, that's the kind of thing that I would love to see first.
And there's tiles on the floor with the names of some former statesmen, people like Daniel Webster, like some of these old timers that really speak to the grandeur of the monuments you see in Jefferson City, in Washington, D.C. So like when you're there, you can't help but think to yourself, this is like Rome for the West.
Right.
This is like our Roman temples, our columns. This is our Rome here for the West. In fact, it's very much modeled after that old Roman architecture to kind of invoke that prestige and the dignity and the reverence that you should have for government.
Yeah.
Now, when you think of ancient Rome, and we've talked a little bit about history before in ancient Rome. If you know anything about Roman statesmen or philosophers, you think of people like Marcus Aurelius, Cicero. You might think of Rufus is another one. Of course, I'm just giving their last names now. They got several names. But these are great orators, like people who really demand your respect because they know how to communicate and they know how to move the masses with information.
And if there's one quality that you need to have, that's a must-have being in Washington, D.C. and making decisions and being a leader, is to be able to communicate.
Yes. You have to be able to communicate because you want to be able to communicate with the people that you're working with so you can all find some common ground or some unity and move people from the left to the right or vice versa.
And to help forge forward.
And because you're looking to move forward. You're trying to move the needle on issues for the sake of the people back home. And not only that, but I mean, you just want to be a good communicator because you want to be able to keep people informed of what's really going on. So that way, back home here in Missouri, we can tell our leaders, well, if that's what's going on, this is what we want you to do.
Right.
Right.
And then they take that message there and they put it all together very coherently.
Yes.
And then deliver to those that need to hear it so that things can get done for his area, his or her area.
And there should be something inspiring about a U.S. senator, a U.S. congressman that can stand up and articulate the current state of the country.
Yep.
And the positions we need to take and the direction we need to move forward in for the sake of peace and prosperity, not just for us, but for all posterity, our children and our grandchildren. But this is what we get. Let's play this clip.
Is it staggering? Is it a staggering responsibility that the head of a bank could literally crash our economy? It's astonishing. That's like if you have, I mean, like, and they also realize is that now they have a guaranteed way to be saved by how, you know. So it's you know, isn't it appropriate that this kind of control should be more stricter to prevent this kind of thing from going? Or should we just go on and start bailing and sailing whoever bank, regardless of how their conduct is?
Do I hear crickets? You
know, I'll give you an example. The Republicans want to give a work requirement for SNAP, you know, for a hungry family has to have this kind of penalties or these some kinds of working requirements. Shouldn't you have a working requirement after we sail your bank with billions of your bank?
What?
Because they seem to be more preoccupied than SNAP and requirements for works for hungry people, but not about protecting the tax papers, you know, that will bail no matter whatever does about a bank to crash it. Sure.
There you have it, folks.
One could answer him because they didn't know what to
answer. Nobody knew what to say. Normally when a U.S. senator is grilling somebody, from time to time, that person will like interrupt and say, "Now hold on, Senator. I do want to say this." And there's a little back and forth. When John Fetterman attempts to speak, everybody gets quiet because nobody knows what to say because they don't know what he's saying, or they also just really feel bad and they know that if they try to push back a little bit, if they can even figure out what he's saying, well, they're just going to be looked at as a bully,
which is very wrong.
They
should call this out immediately.
So a couple things that he said that I can't figure out. I don't know what it means. I don't know what bailing and sailing is.
Did you catch that? Yeah, I caught a lot of things.
Bailing and sailing, but how? None of this makes any sense.
And then he's quiet after he asks the question because nobody's answering because they don't know what his question is.
And then he mentions something about getting bailed out by tax papers.
Yes.
And like, folks, I'm not being mean or callous or heartless here. I understand people misspeak. Ken, we have microphones in front of us all the time. Do we not misspeak sometimes?
All the time.
We misspeak sometimes. But this is far more than misspeaking.
He said, at one point, I think he said more stricter.
Yes. more stricter. I caught that one too. But you see, all of this was jumbled up between a bunch of but how? And they are going to get bailed out. Why?
Text papers.
It's just jumbled up nonsense. Now, inside of his head. Now, I know he had a stroke. And like I said, I'm not being mean or callous here. I understand that the man has had has challenges disability-wise where his mental health is concerned and just also where his cognitive abilities are concerned.
Yeah.
But this all the more speaks to why it is we have got to be better stewards of our country. And when you see somebody like that, I don't understand how the Democrats can put somebody like him forward knowing full well. Is this literally the best Democrat that the state of Pennsylvania can find? You're going to be able to find a Democrat in the coal mine who doesn't have a formal education, who probably doesn't even think much about politics, who could obviously do a far better job of understanding what's going on and communicating that back to the district or to whoever it is that's before him in one of those Senate committees. This is a terrible, terrible place that we're in America right now. A couple weeks ago, Ken, you and I were talking about the Roman Empire and how the U.S., you can overlay right on top of the Roman Empire and see the exact same trends that brought the end of the Roman Empire into fruition.
Yeah.
You see that happening in the U.S. The thing that Rome was able to have and hold on to for a long time was good orators, like people who could speak and communicate. They just made a lot of bad decisions. I feel like we have jumped the shark here because now we've already moved right into the point where the people making the bad decisions are also entirely incoherent and they can't find anybody better.
And Paul, that's where they need to stop it right now. They need, you know, all of these wishy-washy, milquetoast type people that are in Congress right now saying, well, I just don't want to say anything because, you know, he's disabled. No. His job is to do things with being an orator. And if he can't do it, then that he cannot do his job. Now, I want to play something here because
this is
symptomatic of the behavior of the Democrat Party. It's a new Democrat Socialist Party, in my opinion, and they want placeholders in these positions.
Mm-hmm.
They want to hold these chairs so they can get votes regardless of whether they can communicate or not. And case in point is Dianne Feinstein.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's play it and then we'll talk about it.
What have you heard?
What have I heard about what?
About your return. How have they felt about your return?
No, I haven't been gone.
Okay.
You should follow me. I haven't been gone. I've been working.
You've been working from home is what you're saying?
No, I've been here. I've been voting. Please, either know or don't know.
She's getting angry. In her mind, she's been there the whole time. Although we all know Dianne Feinstein has not been there for quite a while. And she said, no, I've been voting. I've been here. I've been voting. You need to understand. Follow me or don't follow me.
She is clearly, that has to be some form of dementia for her to think that she's actually been at the Capitol building voting when the whole world knows that she's been gone.
Right.
For her to think that when I was...
Paul, real quick.
Yeah.
The Democrats don't care.
Yeah.
They do not care about these people. They don't, just like they don't care about their constituents. They don't care about these people in office. They just want them to be a placeholder so they can have the power to vote.
When I came home from the Marine Corps, I went to a Christian college for a couple of years. And while I was in this Christian college, one of the things that I got to participate in was a little ministry by which me and some other people would go to a nursing home and talk to people that were in, obviously, the later stages of life. And a lot of these people were in a nursing home because they didn't have their minds anymore.
Right.
And when someone doesn't have their mind anymore and they need care, you begin to get signals that something's not right when they start misremembering things that should not be misremembered. For example, you know, if somebody were to sit down in their living room and talk to you as though it's still 1955,
right?
You might think to yourself, there's something a little wrong here. This is exactly what's happening now with Dianne Feinstein. And for the Democrats to continue to push her forward, hold her here, keep her in the seat instead of getting her the care that she needs, it should be abundantly clear that the Democrat Party, the party that's for death of preborn children in the womb, is totally fine with using people as human capital as long as they can hold on to power, to your point.
Yeah.
This is not about Dianne Feinstein. This is not even about her voting record. This is about a party that wants absolute control, and they want the compliance of the American people. And I'm telling you, people, you better pay close attention to what they're doing with John Fetterman, what they're doing with Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah, and Joe Biden.
And Joe Biden. There's three right there.
Yep.
Because they will do the exact same thing to you. It is their agenda.
That's very, very well put. Because this is their end goal. Their end goal is control of everybody. But they need to have the power to be able to control everyone. And they're doing it right now. You know, if I was a family member of Dianne Feinstein or John Fetterman and I cared about them, Joe Biden, Jill Biden's husband, I would be saying, look, enough.
Mm-hmm.
They're not participating anymore. They're not a part of this anymore. They need care. And get them out of here now. They're not going to continue to be a senator. They're not going to continue to be a president or representative of this country.
What?
They need care.
Why do you think that Democrats are more likely, it seems, I'm only saying it seems, Democrats are more likely, I think this is part of the human condition, we're all sinners in need of a savior, right? Republicans and Democrats, people can be tyrants.
Yeah.
Anybody
oh,
can
yeah.
be. But my question is why does it seem the Democrats are the ones right now that have these people in office, and why is it that their family's not stepping forward?
Why? Is there a lot of money involved?
Is it the prestige of saying that your father-in-law or your father or your brother or your husband is a U.S. senator? Is it because you're trying to ride the coattails of power? Hey, as long as they're close, then that brings me closer too. So even if it means that they struggle in their old age, well, then I'm going to be fine with it. I'm going to be fine with their struggles. I'm going to be fine with their discomfort. I'm going to be fine with their confusion and sadness. Because, hey, they are the ones holding this place. So is it really, it's about the party having a placeholder, but I think sometimes for families that don't respect life, these people can just be placeholders for them too.
But they still have the power, don't they?
They do. People need to wake up. Hey, it's been a good one here, Ken, on
yeah.
the Paul Kirtman Show. It's been a good show, and we will be back next week from noon to 1, right here, 101.9, 94.1, News Talk STL.
Follow Paul on social media at Paul Kirtman. This is the Paul Kirtman Show on News Talk STL. For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.